Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude! Hey!
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy. Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude!
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah!
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude, brought to you by Boston College 24/7 and Armchair All-Americans, Season 3, Week 12. The Eagles got tomahawk chopped by the Seminoles on Saturday, losing a heartbreaker to Florida State by a score of 38-31. The Eagles fall to 5-5 on the year and face the prospect of missing out on a bowl for just the second time in Coach Addazio's 7-year tenure. On today's special edition Daz Hot Seat episode, Matt and I will break down what went wrong versus the Noles, talk a little BC hoops, and head into the courtroom for what will likely be a heated, duteous corpus as we debate whether it's time to say goodbye to the head dude.
Matt, I've had so many feelings the last couple of days. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm disappointed, frustrated. Needless to say, the Addazio era has taken its toll on me mentally. But before we get to my biannual therapy session at this point, a word from our good friends at MyBookie. The football season is winding down, but there is still plenty of time to get off the sidelines and get into the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all the football action every weekend, always with the most up-to-date lines and most prop bets of any sportsbook on the planet. If you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie. Whether it's parlays, teasers, props, futures, live bets, you name it, they have everything you need to make money on the weekends. Best part is if you join MyBookie right now, they will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000 to use on all of your best picks. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Matt, a couple of quick housekeeping notes. We're going to do an abbreviated episode today, just an FSU recap, and then, like you said, a spirited court session. And then we'll be back next week for a full Notre Dame preview. A little round ball roundup in both episodes, because we are a really good team, by the way. But I guess with that, let's just rip the Band-Aid off and talk about it. This was the worst red bandana day ever, Matt.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And obviously, we jumped out to that early lead, right? We led it 14-3 early on. For a little bit, it looked like this could turn into another NC State or Syracuse type of slugfest where, we get out to that early lead and never really look back. And then we obviously miss a couple field goals, a couple drives stall. Florida State figures out that they can just burn us with speed. And they put up 21 unanswered to take a 10-point lead in the third quarter. And then we're obviously playing catch up from there. Obviously not the red bandana game that a lot of us were expecting. Certainly not the type of game that I was expecting. You kind of thought that if we got the lead early on, Florida State would sort of just give up, given the way their season's gone. But it's pretty clear that their interim coach, Odell Higgins, had other ideas on that day.
Yeah, and it's just more of the same. Our defense at this point, I don't know what else we can possibly say about it. I mean, they're historically bad by every measure, maybe if not probably the worst in BC history. Yet another, borderline record-breaking offensive performance, this case from a team, without a head coach in 30-degree weather. The lack of tackling, the lack of scheming, putting linebackers on wide receivers, going, 4-3 on obvious passing downs. It's just dumbfounding at this point. And if you thought there was even a chance that we kept FSU off the board in the final, 2 minutes, 23 seconds after the tying touchdown, you were out of your damn mind. I didn't expect them to get two touchdowns, a 60-yard and a 66-yard, but I knew for sure that there was no chance that they were going to score. So if anything, I was glad they scored quick so that we had a chance to tie it up.
Yeah, I said the same exact thing. So we got that touchdown, obviously, late in the game. Grossell had, what a kid, what a gamer that kid is. But obviously, he lunges into the end zone, ties it up, and was it 24-24 at that point? And first thing I said, I think I texted you and our head of legal, saying basically, you know, we got to let them score so that we can score again. I mean, we saw it against Louisville. This is not a defense, that, especially in crunch time. I mean, they're just not going to show up. And the Florida State from the second quarter on had really figured out how to beat this BC team. And obviously they watched the Kansas tape. And we can honestly, rather than go deep into the details here, I think you can just throw in like the 5 minutes we talked about the defense during the Kansas game. So go back to that podcast. And just you could throw that in.
Every single week.
It was the same exact thing as the Kansas game with, and you talked about, you know, schematically, but it's also, I mean, it's tackling, it's really everything. We don't have the personnel out there. I don't know that they're Division I players, let alone Power Five, let alone ACC players. And you know, Florida State, as we talked about last week, obviously has some big time athletes. They got 5-star recruits, skill players across the board, and They figured out probably by the second quarter that all they had to do was, really they had three options. One, it's, all right, we'll just throw, we'll throw deep balls to Maury and Terry or anyone, right? And there's a pretty good chance that that's going to result in a touchdown. We'll throw a slant over the middle, get a guy, you know, in any type of space, and we can count at least 4 missed tackles, and then he's probably gone. Or, by the way, we also have this this mobile quarterback, Travis, or whatever his name is, right? And literally all we have to do is run any direction with him, and that's going to result in a touchdown. And it really was that easy. So we'll talk about, Daz's future and all that coming up in Duteus Corpus. But there's absolutely nothing left you could say about Bill Sheridan's job at this point. I mean, it is just historically bad. 125th ranked out of 130 FBS teams. It's an embarrassment, and it's costing, you know, one of the most talented offenses in BC history, 3 to 5 wins this year, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, I almost feel like it's one of the biggest indictments on Daz's incapabilities as a CEO of a program that he's held on to Sheridan this long. It's absolutely beyond reproach that this man is still in a position of authority or a position of power. Sure, we don't really have any, you know, young guns on the staff right now. It's not like we still have Campanelli back there to kind of come up and take the reins, though. Now you have to ask yourself, why did we not?
The D-backs coach, who I think, what's his name, Lewis from Colorado State? Yeah. I don't really know. He's new this year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want, he certainly deserves some of the blame too.
No, there's no one. There's no one who you want.
The entire side of the football should be wiped out.
Yeah, it is frustrating now when you think, you know, why did we not offer Campanelli this job? Or, you know, if we did, he's not a defensive coordinator at Michigan.
No, but he was a co-defensive coordinator, and he got poached for money. And I think, you know, obviously BC has restrictions that Michigan doesn't, and money is certainly one of them, right? So I don't think Campanelli, you know, he was known, he won awards for being the top assistant coach in the country. We were not going to be able to hold on to him short of naming him head coach.
Well, I also have, that wouldn't have been a horrible idea. I also have the conspiracy theory that Addazio is intentionally not firing Bill Sheridan because he wants to wait till the end of the year and then use him as a scapegoat. So he'll basically fire him at the end of the year and say, okay, no, now we're going to be fine, versus if he fired him after Kansas like he should have, if he fired him after Clemson like he should have, if he fired him after, you could pick any of those other games. What was the other record-breaking one in there? It was Louisville, I think, was a wet record as well. Fire after any of those games, then you could say, okay, well, Clemson still came out and scored 59 points the next game, so maybe you're the common denominator here. So that's my conspiracy theory / concern. But it's just, there's literally, I don't think there's anything else we can add on the defensive
and simple
side of the
stuff
ball.
Too. Like, why are you playing man-to-man against?
Correct.
Like, you've your team.
And correct.
They suck. And his very, I'm not really defending this whatsoever, but we were banged up in the secondary. I think Palmer and Connor Grieco, who's been, you know, one of the few bright spots on that side of the ball, they were both out with injuries. So we had Borgerson, who did play well against Cuse, but it's obviously, you know, a different level against Florida State. Tate Haynes was back out there. Mehdi Alatruk, who I haven't been a huge fan of this year. You had personnel out there that you knew could not stay with this team from a man-to-man standpoint. I don't know that zone would have made a big difference because we've struggled there too, but that's unforgivable. And they were doing press coverage too. And yeah, all they had to do was run go routes, and it was an automatic touchdown.
No, and the first of the two touchdowns in the last 2 minutes was, you know, one of just the most pathetic excuses I've ever seen in my life. I think there were literally 11 missed tackles in the span of the 15 seconds that it took him to run, you know, 60 yards down the field. But it's every play. It's so difficult to watch and as fun at times as this offense has been to watch. I mean, the Syracuse game was one of the more fun offensive performances I've ever seen in a as a BC fan. The defense is literally torture at a certain point. Like, this should be something the CIA should run this on loop when they're, you know, off their at their black sites doing like torture stuff. Run this defense to any Boston College fan, and that's enough to make you tell every secret anyone has ever told you.
All right, that's the state of the defense. No surprises there. Nothing has changed all season long. Remember how high we were on these guys when they forced five turnovers against Virginia Tech? We don't have to get into quotes and who said.
We won't quote.
Yeah. And who said that they were, you know, this defense was going to be elite.
I'm going to get that tattooed on my forehead. The Matt quote of this defense is going to be my favorite in Boston College history. But here we are.
Man, I'll tell you what. Let's talk offense because, you know, that was a, for the most part, they were pretty solid. And they put some, you know, absolute electric drives together. And that was probably one of the most frustrating parts, right? Is, you know, BC would put these 8-minute drives together and, you know, they would really earn every point that they scored. And then they'd kick the ball off and FSU would just throw deep or throw a slant over the middle, as we've talked about, and they'd score within seconds, right? So, but overall, offense was I would say outstanding for the most part. Yeah, Grossell.
Yeah, okay.
They left points out there, right? But they were pretty solid. Grossell was 20-for-29 for 224 yards and 2 touchdowns. Obviously, he threw an ill-advised pass trying to make something happen in the fourth quarter. Dylan had another great day on the ground. The line was dominant as they've been. And yeah, there were some drops out there, and certainly, you know, they left some points out there, but I refuse to let this offense take any type of blame for that game.
Sure, that's fair. But again, I think outstanding is definitely a little high praise. They had, again, 2 great drives to start the day and then, you know, 2 drives to end the day. And that was pretty much it. I mean, that was it. They, again, a lot of mistakes. The A.J. Dillon drop killed us at the, I think it was the, you know, whatever, when we got the field goal to get within 7. That was brutal to watch. And, you know, I'll say it was, talk about just leaving points on the board so you're not being able to finish the drives. But those, to me, are also kind of just the wrong coaching decisions, too. I mean, we, you know, Boomer is obviously a better kicker than we've maybe had in the last 2 or 3 years, but he's not exactly Adam Vinatieri and trotting him out there for 47-yard kicks when, you know, you have a 4th-and-4 with the best running game and the best line in the country. Stuff like that really bothers me. So when you really looked at it.
Hold on. We should talk about that. I mean, and explain this to me, because this is another situation where I don't fully understand it, or at least the anti-Daz narrative here that comes up every time any decision goes wrong, every time I miss a field goal, the hindsight police comes out. I know we've talked about this before, but man, it was 4th-and-4, right, with, what, 30 seconds to go? So best case, what, you
it was 30 seconds to go, Matt, because he let the clock run down, to be fair. This was a clock mismanagement.
No, I think they completed, actually, I have the box score here, the play-by-play here, it was 50 seconds to go, they completed a 15-yard pass to Jake Burt.
Go back before that. There was a couple plays, but there was a massive clock mismanagement. I was walking around the stadium, kind of going section to section, watching it as I was trying to work my way down.
Oh, so you were in the concession. So you don't really,
incorrect.
You don't
That's
really
know. Very incorrect. I was popping up in the stairs literally every play.
Was like I was at a winery. I was at a winery watching the game on my phone. So. Okay.
Fair enough.
But anyway, it seems to me what happened is, well, and also part of this too, in their defense, is you don't want the drive to stall, or even if you score on the drive, you don't want to leave any time on the clock for FSU to take 30 seconds and get points, right? So,
but that was not the only 4th-and-short decision that he elected for a long field goal. I think there was one in the first quarter as well when they were driving towards the, you know, student section. I believe it was the 3rd drive. So I think it was when we were at 14-3 and had a chance to basically step on the throats, go up huge, and just end the day.
We convert, I mean,
well, yeah, Matt. But when's the last time we've converted a 45-yard field goal either?
Louisville, I think, was a 40-yard. Boomer's better from longer distance. I think we're getting off topic here. It doesn't really matter, but I mean, there's no given that you're going to convert. And then, by the way, you give the ball to Florida State with half the field, and they probably score there. So
I get that, but statistically, your odds with the best line and the best running game in the country are better of getting 2 yards than a 45-yard field goal.
Well, it was a 4th-and-4. And again, like, best case, you're getting – like 10 more yards there. So you're making it a shorter field goal with the huge risk that you're probably not going to convert that because four is just outside the range where you're probably going to run it. And I don't know. I know people love to get mad at Addazio for everything. That was another situation where I could sort of see both sides of it.
Okay. All right. I disagree with you, but I think we made a promise before this episode to try to keep it civil. And I'm sure I have some uncivility coming into the courtroom, so I'm not going to waste it now.
Yeah. So with that said, I mean, overall, I mean, obviously an absolute dagger when you talk about, you know, trying to get to 7+ wins this year. We said it last week. This was one of those games they had to have. Obviously, huge disappointment for the Red Bandana, especially with the passing of Mr. Crowther this past year. So, overall, just really, really disappointing across the board. To have that early lead, let it slip away, and, you know, there's a handful of very fixable things, or maybe not so fixable defensively.
Not fixable.
Well, I'll say it's, you know, football comes down sometimes to a few key plays, and our defense is incapable of making those plays.
But why are we always on the wrong side of these key plays?
I will say, well, just this year, defensively.
I mean, when's the last time we won a one-score game?
Well, we'll get to that. Okay. But I will say, obviously, the Florida State team has a ton of talent. You know, Blackman was slinging the ball around. Their receivers are elite. We did stuff the run, so that was somewhat exciting, especially or except when the quarterback was running all over the field. But it's pretty clear that Florida State team came to play for that interim coach. So we'll give them a little bit of credit there. But
I'll say, no, look, the bottom line is that I think that the Willie Taggart years will probably go down as the worst two-year stretch in the history of Florida State. And the fact that they've somehow gone 2-0 against us in that time period is absolutely pathetic. Last year's loss was completely unforgivable. This year's was just embarrassing. Again, we completely dominated the first half, yet only came up by four. Personally, I felt like at that point we had just no chance to steal this game, and I think I knew the writing was on the wall. But our inability to take advantage of these spots where we, you know, have wins basically for the taking and we just let them slip away is incredibly frustrating. Again, like you said, a terrible decision for Red Bandana Day to A, do it, you know, not in a guaranteed night game, B, to do it at the end of the year. Just horrible decisions overall, basically trying to upstage senior day with it.
Well, let's relax there, because I think the Crowther family has some input on what day it is, and they don't want it to be that close to 9/11, so I don't really like that whole narrative.
I think that's also a leap as well. I don't know if you can say that they specifically don't want it near 9/11, especially because the first two were literally, I think, like the weekend of.
No, they specifically don't do it the weekend of for that exact reason, man.
Have they said, do you have
this?
That's
what I read. No, I haven't talked to the family, no, but that's what I've read. So
that's a new either one. Way. That's a new one. That's a new one, and I don't know that I fully buy that.
We're getting off track here. I think we're on the same page. Very disappointing loss, and it's going to make the rest of the season an uphill climb. I will say there's zero doubt in my mind. We'll go into South Bend and knock off Notre Dame, but we'll get to that next week.
Yeah, there's doubt in my mind, but okay.
I figured there would be. All right, so the kind of key point of, or I guess the point of this episode, obviously we're on a bye week and we'll cover Notre Dame next week, but we did want to get into the courtroom. Before we do that, Matt, you want to talk about BC Hoops. I don't have a ton to say, but if you want to talk about BC Hoops, why don't you take the next
I'll just
do that.
I mean, I just need 30 seconds. Look, this team is good, and if you're not on the bandwagon, you should be. They are 2-0 with two, not power five wins, but I guess power wins. Wake Forest stinks, but they're still in ACC. We're 1-0 in the ACC. And then USF is actually a good team this year, a tournament-bound team,
Says whom?
Says literally anybody.
Weren't they in the they were in the CBI last year, which I guess is better than we did last year.
No. They're fully like a tournament hopeful team this year. That will end up as a quadrant.
A tournament hopeful team.
No, that will end up as a quadrant one win at the end of the year.
We were a tournament hopeful team in 2015.
That will end as a quadrant one win at the end of the year. I don't know. I mean, I know why, because you somehow want to take the heat off of Addazio. So I know you root against this basketball team, but you're going to be missing out in March, and you're not welcome to watch the team when they are in the tournament in March. I'm just making that rule right now.
But you've said that every year because you love Jim
Matt,
Christian.
You took USF with the points.
Well, that was a business decision.
And it was wrong. And I hope you bet against them every year, and I hope you lose all of your money.
Well, that was the heat of the moment, because I figured some of that – I mean, people were obviously going nuts about Fire Dazz and all that, so I figured take some of the heat off them. I didn't want that going out to the public. Because yeah, I don't know why I feel the way that I do about football versus hoops. But I guess my message is, let's pump the brakes a little bit because Wake barely beat Columbia or something like that.
Oh, Wake's not a good team. Game. No, Wake's not a
brutal.
Good team.
And then South Florida was missing their top two players. And again, they were a CBI team last year. So
I'm just saying, just again, wanted we got to put that out there. These freshmen are ballers.
Didn't we turn the ball over like 27 times too?
Yeah, and still won.
Aren't we scared of what's going to happen against like Virginia in actual competition?
I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the ACC, but I think that, you know, you're also in a conference where if you're in eighth or ninth place, you have a legitimate shot at the tournament.
Okay. Yeah, I'd believe that when I see it, I guess. We have never finished better than, what, 13th? So it'd be quite a hill to climb, obviously, without Bowman and Tabs and everyone else relying on.
Well, we got Thornton, who is a superstar. Thornton is the Duke guy who's an absolute superstar. The freshmen are good. This is the best defensive team Christian has ever put out there, which is
Eli
actually
Carter,
a nice change of pace.
Eli Carter
never looked good.
Eli Carter scored 30 against, like, I forget who, like San Francisco or UC Riverside, I think. So
this is a little bit different. I'm very confused. I don't know why you're rooting. We'll get to
I'm
this.
I'm not.
You are.
Well, no, I want Christian fired, and I think that there's a lot of false
optimism. So
you would rather this program.
You would rather fire him than have him go to the tournament.
No, not at all. I just don't think that's in the cards. So I want to manage everyone's expectations. That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get into the courtroom, a quick word from our friends at Manscaped, number one in men's below the belt grooming, offering precision engineered tools to perfect your family jewels. Guys, we all know we're staring danger in the face anytime we need to clean up below deck. That's why Manscaped has redesigned their electric trimmer for good. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nag or snag anything it shouldn't. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, which I'm sure we could all use whether we're playing in the game or watching a fourth quarter barn burner from the sidelines. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Matt, this studious corpus will be more painful for you than a pinching or nicking undercarriage trimmer. So with that, let's just head into the courtroom.
All right, court is in session.
So the bottom line is that we are bringing in Steve Adazio on a now annual trial. This has been really every year, I would say.
This is round three, Matt, and the jury's still out on who won rounds one and two. Although
well, no
I will say that,
them.
Well, I think Coach Adazio is still here, so I guess I would say that I won. You know, with the benefit of hindsight,
would you say
I
that's
won
a
rounds
correct
one
decision?
And two.
Would you say that's a correct decision that he's still here? Are you happy with this year?
Well, that's an interesting question, Matt, and I think we'll answer it throughout the course of the next 15 minutes or so.
I don't know that we will, but the bottom line is that he needs to go, and he needed to go yesterday. Matt, I'm just going to throw the numbers out here. These aren't a surprise to you. You've heard these 100 times, and somehow your opinion is still what it is. 43-43 overall, 24-42 against Power 5, 21-34 against the ACC, 1-16 against the top 25. Never more than 7 wins in 7 seasons, and it will be, again, not this year as well. If you keep him at this point, you are accepting mediocrity, expecting mediocrity, and saying that's all BC should aspire to ever be is mediocre, and we should be happy with 7-5, and we should be happy with never going above 500 in the ACC, which is really what all the ESPN pundits are saying. And that, as a BC fan, really infuriates me because it's all these patronizing fans who just think, you know, BC never has a right to compete for a national or a let alone a national championship, an ACC championship, which I think we all know where this program was, what, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's where you and everyone else in the BC Fire Daz Twitter echo chamber is sort of conflating the argument a little bit. And I'll give you, my argument is pretty straightforward. It's never wavered. It's not really debatable. And I think it's applicable really to every single football program. It's not specific to BC. It's binary, right? If you have a better option if there's a better option out there to hire as the head coach, then send the current guy packing. If not, you stay the course. And I think what makes BC's position unique this year, obviously, and all each of the past couple of years, is that every other hot seat situation is, you know, there's not a ton to lose by firing the guy, right? Because more often than not, it's, you know, it's like Chad Morris at Arkansas. The guy's won, you know, 2 games in 2 years, and he hasn't really built anything, so there's nothing worth tearing down. So who really cares? Obviously for us, if you're going to fire Daz, you better damn make sure that you have the right replacement. Otherwise, you're going to uproot the best offensive line of running game in BC history. You're going to jeopardize the recruiting stronghold in New Jersey and Ohio. You lose Coach Bajakian. You piss away the futures of Zay Flowers, Bailey, Garwo, Vrabel, Pine, Mahogany, your boys, the, what's it called, Lay the Wood guys, Shida's a swear word, and all that. You potentially lose by canning a Dazu at this point, right? Sure. And where my frustration comes in is the names that I've seen floated over the past few days. You know, Chad Morris, who I mentioned, he was floated out. Some guy named Bob Shoup, who's 7-23, he was a coach in the Ivy League. Joe Moorhead, who's really struggling, will probably get canned at Mississippi State. If we're willing to shell out for the right guy, like Mike Leach comes to mind, Luke Fickell, Jim Leonard, who's lighting it up at Wisconsin, you know, there's a ton of names like that that I say go for it, right? If there's a guy out there that BC is willing to shell out for, then go for it. I'm not saying that there's not a better option than Daz out there, but I think you and I both agree it's unlikely that BC gets him.
Okay, but your argument is just basically that you want the best coach that we have. That's not an argument. It's just you're physically not making an argument. Yes, of course, I would rather Steve Addazio than, I don't know, my high school coach.
All right, so I'll put it in, I guess, plain English. If that wasn't clear enough, I think that Steve Addazio, short of hiring one of these other guys, is the right guy for the job as of now and has the potential to go beyond 7 wins that he's shown thus far.
What has shown you that he ever has the potential to go above 7 wins? Honestly, what has shown you in
and I think you yourself said this last episode or the episode before, if we combined this year's offense with last year's defense, we're like a top 15 team. So it's clear that he's able to build an elite defense, send a ton of people to the NFL, and then also have, you know, the best offense in BC history.
But you know how mathematically impossible it is to be that consistent in the sense that you have a good offense only when you have a terrible defense and vice versa? I mean, again, the year that we had the Don Brown best defense in the country, we were the worst offense in the country. Like, at a certain point, your sample size is getting large enough now that we have to just appreciate that it is what it is. And whether that's a budget issue of we can only hire one good coordinator at a time or whatever it might be, and we need the head coach to kind of pick up the slack. I don't know what the issue is, but at a certain point, you can't say, well, yeah, you know, we've had good defenses and we've had good offenses. One of these years, maybe in year 8, we'll have them both at the same time. And especially watching this year, by the way, there's no indication whatsoever that this defense is, you know, going to gel and next year all of a sudden, you know, figure it out. So the bottom line is we know what we have at this point. And if you're okay with that, it's kind of just accepting mediocrity, right? Like, there's no risk involved.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm not saying I'm happy with 7 wins. And by the way, it was going to be 8 wins last year. So just relax with that. And what I'm saying is I think that the pieces are in place, especially with what he's done on the offensive side of the football this year, especially considering who we lost last year. We lost 4 starters on the O-line. We lost 3 of our top 4 receivers.
So we should be psyched with going 8-5 last year.
We lost our offensive coordinator. We lost our starting quarterback midway through the year, and we're still putting up our best offensive numbers since the Flutie days. This is exactly the type of offensive identity that he's been building throughout the last 7 years. And now it's in place. He's got an elite running game. He's got an elite offensive line. I'm not comfortable pulling the rug out right now just because, and I don't want to say just because it's obviously been an embarrassment.
So he has everything that he wants.
The defensive side of the football, we lost a ton, and it was a perfect storm this offseason, obviously. But if we had an average defense, I think everyone agrees we would be a 10-win team.
Right, and everyone agrees that, again, the year we had the Don Brown defense, if we had an average offense, we'd be a 10-win team, but we don't have that. And again, the ACC, by the way, has gotten materially worse since the first day he stepped on campus. The talent level has absolutely gotten better, and I think that, you know, absolutely is a credit to him. But ironically, it's a huge indictment on him that the talent is as good as it is and the ACC is as bad as it is, and we still can't get over the hump. Last year's team, the fact that we sent, whatever it was, 10 guys to NFL training camps and still in that ACC could only come out with a 7-5 regular season record and a sub-500 record in the ACC is absolutely mind-boggling to me, and it shows that he's a horrible in-game manager. He's a poor, you know, in-season CEO essentially.
Well, sub-500. It was 500. Just get your facts.
Okay,
right.
Fine. Not above 500. Whatever. I think that's good for you. We beat Wake Forest and Louisville and add whoever else you want in. Literally the worst ACC of all time. But it's beside the point. It's at a certain point we know what we have. It is frustrating, and the bottom line is that if we just continue to do this, it's just, you know, I looked at the student section and the young alumni section on Saturday. It was completely empty at kickoff, and it did get jam-packed at end of the first quarter, start of the second quarter. By halftime, it completely had emptied out. And sitting there, I was very frustrated at the time. I said, why don't people care the way that, you know, that we do? We want home field advantage, all that stuff, all that good stuff. And he quickly realized that I don't blame them. And there's a huge amount of apathy that has set in. And at a certain point, you can't blame the apathy anymore, because it's the administration saying that we're just okay with 7 wins and there's nothing that's going to change from that. If you could show me flashes, and we talked about this last year, you said, look, if you get 7 wins every year and every now and then you get the chance to win 9 and 10, we'd all take that tomorrow. But there's been no indication in 7 years that that's going to happen anytime soon under this regime. And, you know, at a certain point, you just got to know when to cut bait. And it's my sincere hope that it happens, you know, within the next 3 weeks. But at the same time, I have nothing to expect from that.
One thing on attendance, I agree with you. I don't know that that can be blamed on Adazio necessarily. Like,
well, it's on win.
It's a college football thing. And you look at any message board outside of the Blue Bloods, outside of Clemson, like Virginia Tech. I pay a lot of close attention to Virginia Tech for whatever reason. And they have the same thing where no one's coming to their games anymore, despite, you know, they're putting a pretty good season together. But I think it's just I don't want to say it's the millennials, but it's, you know, at least at BC in particular, I think it is the type of undergrad that we're recruiting these days, right?
I disagree with you. I'll let you finish.
Well, no, I think if we had an air raid offense, do you think like the nerds in Costco would be like, oh yeah, now I'm going to go watch the air raid?
No, I think it has something to do with the style of football. I think we were 6-1 or 5-2. I think they would. Yeah. Or you're getting votes. I mean, we saw it. We saw it last year when we were ranked for a minute. Like, people cared. Dewey's, the Game Watch bar in New York was absolutely jammed. This is a fan base that is a sports fan base still. We've just stopped being a college sports fan base.
And find me a coach that can get us to that 10-2 that you know we talk about all the time, and I'm in. That's why, like, my argument isn't that ridiculous. It's just I don't think that's realistic.
But what's your solution then? That's the thing.
I think that you know, you understand what this defense went through, because that's really the issue right now. Just like we talked about last year, where it was, to me, it was we needed a more consistent quarterback and we needed a kicker, and then outside of that, we'd be absolutely. Probably we would have done what Syracuse did last year, right? 10 wins. With this year, it's obviously, you know, the defense across the board. And I think that we knew that coming in. I think you and I were obviously very optimistic that these young kids would put it together. But we got absolutely shredded this offseason with everyone in the pros. And, you know, we returned like 4 guys, right, that had never started a football game before. We knew this defense was going to have growing pains. Fortunately, what we do have is Adazio is one of the best developers of talent, right? I think you would agree with that.
On the offensive side, certainly.
Think of all the defensive guys that are in the draft right now.
Right, but couldn't we also say that, you know, there's been some phenomenal defensive minds, and now that they've left, it seems like there's at least normally been development throughout the year. When Don Brown's there, he's figuring things out throughout, you know, the year. Campanelli figuring out things throughout the year. We're seeing that now those guys are gone. There has been no development whatsoever throughout the defensive side of the ball. If anything, it's gotten worse.
Yeah, and I probably agree with you that we probably missed on a recruiting class, right? So the current, I don't know, sophomores, juniors, I guess up to the seniors too. Obviously, it would have been great if Hamp returned. That feels like an excuse, though. That's not like that would have fixed everything, right? That's not
here
what
you
I'm
go.
Saying.
Like, I got two quotes for you. This, to me, sums it all up. So here is two people quoting. I'm not going to tell you who is who. We're going to figure that out after. This is the first quote. Listen, this isn't complicated. I mean, we lost a fair amount of players on defense, and we've got some very talented players that we're trying to plug in on defense, and they're young. That's the first quote. I'm not going to tell you who said that one. Second quote.
It was Steve Adazio, and the second one's John Lamont, Matt.
Sick. We've got guys that haven't started previously, but they've had enough playing time and experience to limit that excuse. So I feel like that shouldn't be an excuse anymore. Not really an excuse in the first place. To me, I feel like we just got to play better. So yep. You were correct in your guesses. The second was John Lamont, who is a linebacker on this team on the defense. The first was Steve Adazio. There's zero accountability. There's zero recognizing, hey, you know what? We actually do need to make a change. He's at not a single point acknowledged a mistake or shown any, you know, any indication that he's going to change something on defense. So it is a lack of accountability.
Every single coach talks about youth. You look at Dino Babers.
But he's talked about youth for seven years, Matt. 7 years.
Well, no, he didn't say anything about youth last year.
Fine, one out of seven.
Pat, college football's cyclical. This is what happens. You hit on recruiting classes, you lose guys to the NFL. Some guys go to the NFL early, and you miss on recruiting classes. You lose assistant coaches. You have injuries to key players. College football's cyclical. It's the reason that Syracuse went from 10 wins to likely 3 wins this year. NC State, same thing. Northwestern, right? They're a one-win team this year. Well, I'd actually say it's a credit to Addazio that despite having one of the worst defenses in college football history, he's able to maintain that floor of probably, we'll call it 6 wins, right?
So we never have an up cycle. We just have a flat cycle.
Yeah, and I think that, and we talked about it last year, that if Dylan stayed healthy, you know, last year could have potentially been a 9-plus win season very easily. And we talked about this year, if we had any defense whatsoever, you know, we can get there. It's just a matter of things coming together at the right time. I don't think that take is that outlandish.
Well, it is, again, at a certain point when it's 70, like your sample size is now large enough where it's becoming an outlandish statement. Matt, if this was year two, I don't think anyone's having this discussion.
It's not
year
like it's
three,
the
year
same
four,
thing.
No one's having this discussion.
It's not
it
like
is
it's
the same thing.
Well, it's not.
It's
not,
always
though,
something, though.
I agree with that. And I totally.
Which is a problem.
I totally get that. But Addazio is an offensive guy. He's an offensive line guy, and we finally have the pieces in place where we have an elite running game, an elite offensive line, and I agree that the defense needs to be gutted. We need to fire the D coordinator a month ago, right? And we probably need to grab a bunch of grad transfers to shore up that side of the football. We still need a kicker, although we got Benny Sauls. That's another guy we lose. Our guy Ben Sauls, best kicker in America, coming next year. So that goes away.
I don't know that it does.
Yeah. I know. And I'm saying, you also have Grissel, who's looked absolutely, you know, awesome in his you know, first meaningful snaps. And then, you know, we have a talented QB room, but Bajakian's been great. I said this last year, too. If we have 80% of the pieces in place, and maybe 80's too much this year because the whole defense, you know, is accountable here. But why wouldn't we just attack those pieces? Because you agree we have a ton to lose by starting from scratch, right?
I think that you are drastically overestimating the start from scratch mentality here. If you bring in a coach that, you know, is someone that people want to play for, you know, the transfers are not going to be as significant as you expect. The D recruits are not going to be as, or D commitments are not going to be as significant. It's like you look at this as if we fire a coach who's gone 7 wins every year, that every single player in the locker room is going to hang up their jersey. Every single commit is going to start fresh, and we're literally going to start with zero. And that's just not the case. Of course, there's going to be turnover. That's inevitable. But you're not going to lose, you know, the whole line. This team is still built around a running style right now. And again, by the way, we're not going to hire. No, but we're not going to. But we're also not going to try to bring in Cliff Kingsbury. We're not going to hire an air raid coach because that's not what our players are built for. That's not what our style is built for. So you're still going to try to fit someone who can play Northeast college football.
Hold on. What's the point of making the change then if you're going to employ the same style of football?
Because you're going to get someone who can do it better.
And you and I have talked to. We've had the pleasure of talking to countless. Families of players, right? And I've talked to a couple of the parents on the O-line, and these guys love Daz, and they're going to play. They like playing for Daz because what he does is he takes guys that aren't recruited from the factory schools, he develops them, and he puts them in the NFL. And that's what these families care about. If Daz leaves, if he takes the Rutgers job, I guarantee you we have a ton of attrition. From the line, from the running game, Garwell lives, you know, 45 minutes away from Rutgers campus, he's gone. I mean, it's just, I think that you're probably overestimating the number of people that would stay for a new coach and deal. And I think the fans, I think the whole grass is always greener approach too. I think fans just assume that when you bring in another guy and he automatically succeeds and he gets this team from 7 wins to 10 wins. And that just doesn't happen 99% of the time. We've seen Willie Taggart. We've seen Chad Morris. We've seen guys that get Joe Moorhead, who people wanted 2 years ago here. It just doesn't, it's not an automatic success story. It's just, it doesn't happen that way.
Of course it's not. So then by your logic, no one should ever fire a head coach ever. Because the risk is you're going to lose transfers, and the risk is that you're going to lose, what was your other, you're going to lose fans. Or, again, at this point, Matt, the apathy in this fan base,
I didn't say anything about fans. What I said is, you know, fans want to make a change because fans are idiots. Sorry to everyone listening, but
Matt, you are the idiot in this situation.
I could be, Matt. And that's, you know, I have to live with that. But from all the family's parents I've talked to, all the ESPN analysts, all the Clemson, like other
Stop listening to opposing fans. They don't know. They don't watch the games that we watch.
They don't know what Boston College has to sell. That are in this echo chamber that they say, oh, I thought we were ever to excel, not ever to mediocre. And they look around like it's the most original thing that you know anyone's ever said. There's a ton going right with this program, and the issues are fixable. We need to do a lot on the defensive side of the football.
They've been fixable for 7 years, and know, nothing has been fixed.
But what Daz is good at is working this year. And all we need is to bring in Anthony Campanelli to right the ship defensively or out Washington.
You just
Washington
said there's no chance he comes back. You just said that 20 minutes ago. You said there's no chance Anthony Campanelli comes back.
No, there was no chance we were going to retain him.
As a defensive coordinator, why would he come back?
As a co-defensive coordinator, Matt. And now I agree, it's probably time to open up the wallet and make him a coach or out Washington or whoever, Matt. It doesn't matter, but we need to find someone on the defensive side of the
football. But why not say that for head coach then? Why not say the same exact argument for head coach? We just need to find a better head coach.
You haven't given me any candidates that you want as opposed to Dest. Do you have any on your list that you think would do a better job?
I think
it's just let's fire him, see what happens.
No, I think that you are putting a little bit of trust in, you know, a guy like Martin Jarman to be able to make the decision, who's worked at, you know, these Big Ten schools, who's been around Gene Smith during big hires, who kind of gets it. So, yeah, I'm putting a lot of faith in him. Matt, I'm not going to let the BC interruption commenters hire the next head coach. That's obviously not the plan. But the idea is that, again,
you want Edsel? Do you want Randy Edsel?
He's a close family friend. He's a neighbor of mine. The bottom line is that, you know, if you look at what you're saying is that, well, it's just a risk to fire him, which you're absolutely right, Matt. It absolutely is a 100% risk. We could fire him. The next guy we could bring in could be, you know, Willie Taggart and be a complete dud, and we could win 4 games next year. And I'm sure you would love that, because the second we fire Adazio, you're now going to look at this program like you do basketball and root for us to lose every week. But the bottom line is that not taking a risk is not an argument for staying with something that we know what it is. We know what it is. And ESPN thinks that we should be happy with 7 wins, and Clemson thinks that we should be happy with 7 wins. I personally don't feel that way. It's a desirable job. You make $3 million a year. You have no media pressure whatsoever. You live in a great city. There's a lot of selling points of you know, this Northeast football school. And I think anyone saying otherwise doesn't get it, or candidly just has this affinity, a weird affinity to Steve Adazio, and you're just as guilty as that as the guys down in Bristol. So
I know, but that's like a minor thing. I do love the guy, and I want so badly for him to succeed, but I think that's a small part of it.
You hate Jim Christian and you love Steve Adazio. That's the bottom line.
Well, Jim Christian's been historically bad. At least Dad's been mediocre. Hold on one second, because really what I'm concerned about losing is the identity he's built, and it's the fact that as a Northeast school, what we need to do is play power football. And we need to have these huge running backs, and we have them for the next 6 years.
Matt, better than anyone. This isn't what he built. We've been aligned for 50 years.
We lost that during the Spaz days.
Sure,
but
don't look at Spaz. You cannot then look at the worst hire we've ever had in BC history, or one of the worst, and say, well, it's better than that. We've been O-line U for 100 years.
Okay, so here's the other thing, too. We will lose New Jersey if we can't Steve Adazio. The Rutgers is obviously hiring Schiano. He owns that state. I mean, we have very important recruiting footholds right now that we can't afford to lose.
If they hire Schiano, we lose.
And
New
we're
going
to go back to the days where we're recruiting from New Hampshire and you know BS schools, and we're going to lose Ohio. And that's not something I'm willing to go through again, because it sets you back not just for the few years that the interim coach potentially fails, but it sets you back for until you can get those back. Till you hire someone like Adazio, who hires great assistants that got into those recruiting. Right. What?
No, I continue. I'll let you finish, and then I have just one question, and then I would like to end this conversation.
Can you see my side of it, though?
No,
I can see yours.
I truly cannot. I truly cannot see your side.
I know, but like last week, you were saying how thrilled you are to have Daz as coach. So it's hard to keep up with, and it's not just you; it's all the fans. I expect more from you, but it's all the fans that every time we lose, it's let's fire Daz, and I'm just exhausted.
Matt, I obviously am always looking for optimism, Matt. I would love if we had that offense. If we won every game by 100, that would be the best thing in the world. But so when we win by 100, I'm obviously going to be psyched. I'm not going to be one of these fans who's like also super negative when they lose, because that's not fun. But I'm also a realist when I see things for my own eyes for 3 hours on a miserably cold Saturday afternoon, and you know, realize what it is.
Okay, yeah, and I guess that's fair. There's no doubt in my mind we beat Notre Dame, so it's gonna suck when that happens, because you're probably rooting against that to happen, because that's gonna save Daz's job. So that's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, that's my take on it. I think that's what the, what everyone that is pro Daz, if there's anyone left in the fan base, probably not. But, you know, at least the ESPN analysts, I think that's their take.
Yeah, ESPN is historically right on football opinions, especially when it concerns things in the Boston area.
I think Eric McClain, who was, actually played and probably has a better leg to stand on when talking about this type of stuff than you or me. Or
Matt, Eric McClain doesn't watch BC every year. He or every week.
He covers the ACC network.
He talks to Steve Adazio and likes the guy. And he's an offensive lineman, so obviously he's going to like the guy. And by the way, shouldn't it concern you a little bit that our ACC counterparts are so excited and so upset that there's talk of getting rid of a guy? Like, that's a little concerning. I would love if, pick whatever shitty coach in the ACC.
I'll show you the TigerNet.com post in which they said, as soon as BC, if they do, they are idiots for fire Godazzi.
So you think honestly TigerNet.com knows more about Boston College football than you and I or the rest of the fan base.
The next post was, boy, I'd love to have him on my staff.
Great.
So Matt, he is
a good staff member. He's a good recruiter. He's a great offensive line coach. There's no question about that. The question is that he's a horrible head football coach. That's the only answer.
That's not true at all. I think a lot of, if we're talking game management in game, I agree it's not his strongest, it's not his strongest characteristic. But I think you and I would both agree that he's made some major improvements to, you know, I think people are still harping on like the Georgia Tech game or the Wake game in 2015. He has not been that same type of coach. If anything, he's been more aggressive and going for it on fourth down than you know, any other coaches, right? I mean, it's not the same. It's not the same old Daz. And I think people are getting hung up on that. And I think you and I have talked about that before, but now you're sort of twisting it to support your argument, which I guess, you know, that's what you have to do. But it's not the same old Daz.
All right, here's the bottom line. I have one question, and I want your honest answer. So if we go 50 years, and Adazio stays 50 years, he's 110, I don't know, however old he is. He wins 7 games every single year, 7-5, 7-6, every single year for the next 50 years.
This is
years.
A dumb question. I've already addressed
this
question.
When you look back, how do you feel about that? Are you happy with how you spent your last 60 years of watching Boston College football?
I've already answered this question.
You haven't. My whole point. You're happy with that.
Matt, my whole
because you'd
point
rather just hang on to him forever because it's easier and we don't lose base, New Jersey and we don't lose all this stuff.
He set a baseline for 7 with the potential to get more than that.
But
what
is his potential to get more than that? You can't call it a potential when in 7 years he's never done that.
Cutcliffe was below 500 for 8 years, and then all of a sudden he threw back-to-back 9-10 win seasons together. When you pull a program out of the gutter, it takes time. Sure, it's taken a little bit more time, but I think we're as close as we've ever been to being the BC, and you know, there's the identity that we need to have. And until Leahy's willing to open up the wallet, which you and I both agree will never happen, I think he's the guy for the job.
You are accepting mediocrity, and as a fellow Boston College fan, that disappoints me to no end. I will say that much.
Tell you what, this has been a great debate. Excited going forward. We'll see what happens in the next couple weeks. But I don't know. I think, obviously, we're never going to see eye to eye on this, although we've had this 3 straight years, and each time you do manage to come back and see it. Not necessarily my way, but you do manage to have the same optimism.
Because what else is sure. What else is there to have? Obviously, I'm going to have optimism, and this program is going to kill me one day. But there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing else. It is what it is at this point. I'm at a loss.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that concludes our duteous corpus for the day. Unless you have any closing comments there, Matt.
No, I would just like to end this segment as quickly as possible, and I do not look forward to having to come back and talk about what's undoubtedly going to be a 500-yard game from Notre Dame next week.
Yeah, but what if we put up 600?
Yeah, so I just don't see that happening.
Something to think about there. All right, so that's our episode for this week. Like we said, we'll be back next week for more Notre Dame coverage and then go through our usual segments. But hope you guys enjoyed this debate, and I feel like probably 95% of you won't agree with me, but that's okay. I think it's a healthy debate to have, and we all want what's best for this team
going
forward.
Nothing about this is healthy. I want to be very clear. Just say the line so we can end this episode.
It's a dude alert, folks.
goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.